Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Welcome to Women Worldwide. I'm your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Today's show is focused on the role of the executive coach, what it means to be a coach, and what you can expect from your coach. Joining me on the show is my friend and colleague, Ken Jacobs, who I've known for years. And after more than 25 years in supervision, management, and leadership and public relations agencies of various sizes, Ken founded Jacobs Communications Consulting, and that was in 2007. And he also founded Jacobs Executive Coaching in 2014. So Ken is a coach, a trainer, and a consultant, and he's going to share his career journey to become a coach and let you in on some of the insights that he's learned and what you need to know as you continue in your own professional development. So, Ken, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
It's wonderful to be here. I'm going to announce this is my first podcast. Is that okay to share?
Yes.
You always remember your first podcast, right? So there you have it. I was a podcast virgin until
that. You know what? We are so happy that this is your first, and I'm sure we're going to have a great discussion, and you're just going to have to do many, many more because you're going to love interviewing on podcasts.
I just hope you'll call me in the morning. That's how we'll know.
Of course. So, Ken, you know, I've known you for a while, but let's share with everyone a little bit about your journey to become an executive coach.
I'm delighted. Well, as you had said, I spent around 25 plus years in the consumer PR agency business, and I got into management early and leadership early, and that led to some great opportunities, but frankly, it created some challenges. So after 25 years in the business, I knew I needed to do something different and I wanted to do something different. So I created my own consultancy, Jacobs Communications Consulting, and that was offering training, consulting, and coaching to PR and related communications agencies. And after a few years, I realized I like consulting. I was getting repeat business. And then, of course, 2008 and 2009 happened, a time most of us would like to forget.
Right.
You know, we muddled through, we got through it. And I realized that, you know, the consulting was good. I was told I was bringing them value. I loved the training, but I sensed that coaching was my calling. And I was doing coaching, but I wanted more tools to empower my clients and to help unstick my clients who felt stuck. So I went to school. I went to the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching, known in our community as IPEC, and, you know, got a number of certifications. But, you know, it really wasn't about the initials after my name, but the training and the knowledge that's required by a rigorous training and certification program. And believe me, it's rigorous.
So how long did it take?
I believe around 18 months, give or take. So lots of reading up front, lots of self-engagement and self-analysis, and not quite self-coaching, but really understanding oneself. Tons of reading, tons of stuff to complete. And I tell you, that first weekend, I mean, it is much more about coach. You don't know this when you go to your first long weekend of training, right, but it is much more about self-coaching and understanding oneself.
Interesting.
And it's much more and then there's peer coaching. You get coached, you coach others. I mean, it's
intense.
It is a lot of work. It's really a lot of work and absolutely well worth it. So I'm now an associate certified coach of the International Coach Federation. And from IPEC, I'm a certified professional coach. And I'm also an Energy Leadership Index ELI Master Practitioner. And that's IPEC's assessment tool. And it is just amazing in what it reveals about us. And I would just say, it's so appropriate and apropos that you use the word, I think you use the word journey.
Yes.
It really does feel like a journey. And what you learn through coaching is you never get there. It's all about the road. You know, it's all about the path. It's all about what joy and passion, you know, you bring to it and you bring to others and you bring to yourself. You never get there. That's okay. That's the way it's supposed to be. And, you know, one thing we say at IPEC is coaching isn't what I do, it's who I am. And I've really come to believe that.
So on that note is, you know, there is a difference between a consultant and a coach, because you said being a coach was your calling, but I don't think that everyone understands that difference.
Right.
So how are they different? What did you discover?
Yeah, well, some coaches would disagree. Well, some consultants might disagree and some coach consultants might disagree, but I feel qualified to answer because I was a consultant first and then a coach, and I still do consulting. But for me, it's really simple. Consulting is, you know, it's working with a business. With coaching, you're working with an individual or a group. And, you know, with consulting, I'm sharing my expertise, my experience, my wisdom, my counsel, you know, all of that. It's giving advice.
Mm-hmm.
The client can take it in and implement it on their own, or they can ask my help for implementation. And it can be done until the, you know, it's over until the next transaction. And nothing wrong with that. Coaching, when I coach, I don't give advice. I don't share my expertise. It has nothing to do with my background. I don't counsel. It's really about believing in the client's wisdom. It's about empowering clients to get in touch with that wisdom and often helping them, you know, get rid of what's blocking them from success and from what they want to achieve and the outcomes they might want for themselves, for their organizations, for their careers, for their followers. And it's much more about asking questions than giving answers. And because I'm a former consultant and a current consultant, I'm very aware of this difference. You know, in consulting, I might tell them what to do and they might do it. And it came from my brain and my mouth and they might feel, you know, quite excited about it. But in coaching, I use questions so that it comes through my client's brain and my client's mouth. And that's significant for two reasons. One, it's their solution, not mine. And going back to believing in their wisdom, it's going to work better than anything I could recommend. And they're much more likely to take action on it, again, because it came through their brain and their mouth, much more powerful. So, you know, as someone, as I said, who did consulting first and then segued into coaching and still consults, I often remind myself, don't tell, ask.
Ask.
You know, if I can simply ask a question and use this tested process of coaching and believe in my coach's intuition, I'm giving my client much more value, much more power. They're going to get there more quickly. Now, to be clear, it's not always a black and white divide. I mean, I try to use more and more coaching techniques when I'm a consultant. I try to, you know, include more questions. So I think my coaching training and experience, I hope, has made me a more effective consultant. And in full disclosure, let's have a full disclosure moment.
Sure.
When I'm dying to share something with a coaching client and I want to give my advice, my expertise, you know, I will first say, how do you feel about my sharing a thought with you that might add to what you came up with? Or you know, how would it feel if I switched into consulting mode just for a moment? And if I get their permission, I jump in. And if I don't get their permission, I don't. And then I make very clear we're going back into coaching mode.
And are they receptive? So when you're in your coaching mode and then you want to sort of pull in the consulting, do you generally have clients who say, yes, please, would love to hear your take on it?
Yeah. Yeah. Almost all the time. But I'm very... I'm really careful about using every technique, mm-hmm. every question, every tool, and we have so many,
right?
So that it does come from the, and if there's just one thing that, you know, gosh, I think it would help them, I ask permission first.
No, that's a great approach. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, and not to take away from consulting or consultants, because why would I do that? I am one.
Right, I am
but
too.
This power, like, you know, but this power, the power of coaching, which is really based on the power of neuroscience, of understanding when people are ready to take in an idea. And again, that if it goes through their wiring and comes out their mouth, it's right for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it, by the fact that it came through their brain and their mouth, and you can tell I'm a little passionate about this. it is going to be better and more effective for them. And that's what I want. That's the power. And that's my obligation to my clients.
Right.
Is to use the coaching technique to tap into their wisdom. Again, because my clients have the answers. I just help them, you know, get rid of what might be in the way. And well, part of it, I think, is getting rid of what might be getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part of coaching, I think, is, you know, that by every call, we should end with a series of actions. So it's not just what happened last week and how do we interpret it? And well, if we look at it one way, it might've been this, but maybe it was something else and, you know, all these things. But I pride myself on working with clients so they have a very practical sense of what they intend to do, what they commit to do before our next call. I think coaching, you know, even one coaching call within it has some observation, has some perspective. There is a lot of, well, what if it's not what you think you saw? You know, well, that, you know, that's one way to look at it. Maybe it's something else. And well, I'm going to get the quote wrong, but bear with me. When we change the way we see things, the things we see change. So there is a lot of discussion of, well, what that might have happened. Your boss might have been being really rude and disrespecting you in front of the crew. What's another way to look at it? What else might have been going on? Oh, well, his boss just, you know, she just yelled at him. And so he was upset. Oh, what else might it be? So there's a, you know, a lot of that. But then in the last 15 minutes or so, we get very practical.
Oh, that's really interesting. You had said sort of the neuroscience and being ready to, you know, kind of come up with your own ideas and conclusions. You are drawing them out. So how does someone know when they're ready to be coached? How do you know, I guess, moving from, we all have mentors, right? And we rely on our mm-hmm. mentors and they give us advice. But how do you move from that and say, okay, now I'm really ready to have a coach?
Well, it may or may not be about movement. I'm a big believer that everyone needs a team. You need Team Deirdre. I need Team Ken, you know. So I think to succeed, we can look at, do I need a mentor or two? What's the value I would get? Okay. What's the value I would get from coaching? What's the value I get from having, you know, a kitchen cabinet or a board of advisors or my go-to people? We should avail ourselves of every, and some people who come to me, you know, I suspect they might need therapy, and I make very clear I'm not a therapist. I ask them their experience in that, and
yep.
You know, what experience have you had with coaching or therapy, and how did it work? And I've worked with a number of clients who are also in therapy, and it's just, they've just got more people on the team.
Sure.
And we are honor bound ethically. If we in any way suspect it's more than just not achieving what we want to achieve. It feels a little dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. We are honor bound to say, you know, that's not what I do. Maybe if you get some help there first and then, you know, do a few months of that. But you know, a lot of this is you sense when someone's ready. I mean, coaching is really a client-led endeavor, not a coaching-led endeavor. The coaching client is going to do the work. They really are. And, you know, I get to hang up and say, gosh, that just felt so good. You know, and for this to pay me? Wow. Oh, I guess I figured something out after all my years of being coached, you know. So it's very much a client-led endeavor. And I always do a preliminary call, a complimentary call, call it what you want. If my instinct is they're not open to coaching, I don't pursue right. and encourage, because it's not going to be, they're not going to get value from coaching just because we've had a chat. They'll get value when they're ready. And on the same token, if I'm just feeling I'm not the right coach for them, I'm honor bound and ethically bound by my certification, but I'm honor bound anyway
right.
to say, I'm going to recommend someone else to you. And, you know, to me, honestly, it's not, did they pick me as a coach? It's, did they pick a coach? And I'm so thrilled. And if they pick a coach whom I've recommended or they found on their own, I'm just happy they're jumping in, because they're going to benefit.
And it sounds like you have to want to get unstuck. So no matter whether they're working with you or with somebody else, that's the ready part. And you can tell when you talk to them.
And it's a lot of work. And I tell them.
You have to get up for it.
We talk about, do you feel ready to do? And we have a little test. We ask, I think, 6 or 8 questions, and we can send it to them and rank them. And it gives them a sense of how ready they are to jump in. And, you know, if they are not ready, they're not ready. They're not going to get value. So
not worth it.
Makes the business development aspect easier, because instead of it being, oh, it's my 5th call, are you, you know, you're ready to jump in now? I just don't do that anymore. I hope I didn't do it before.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. What am I admitting in a podcast? No, I don't think I ever did that. I think I do follow up less, because mm-hmm. I really believe they'll know if they're ready.
Right.
They'll know if it's coaching. They'll know if it's me. And, you know, it's not like you're going to send the 5th email and they go, oh, you're right. Thank you for the email. I just remembered I'm ready. You know,
yeah.
It's not
it doesn't work that way.
It's not my email that's going to remind them that they're ready. They'll know when they're ready.
So what are one or two challenges that you're helping executives to face?
How many hours do you have? Well, I think of them as opportunities, actually, because I think sometimes when we say challenges, although some people are driven to overcome their challenges, for some people it can put a negative, a difficult, I'm challenged. Mm-hmm. So I really do think of them and encourage them to think of them as opportunities. But here are some that I've helped clients face. I mean, in our business, you know, delegating and empowering the next tier of leadership, learning to be more decisive leaders, and making faster decision and decision making in general, and helping them understand that when they delay a decision, that's a decision too, and it's probably not the right one for themselves or their organization. And, you know, making a decision, even the wrong decision, just have to imagine using the wrong decision is actually better than no decision. Managing fear. Oh my goodness.
That's a big one.
You know, well, so here's this industry, PR, advertising, communications, where these leaders are asking for, you know, $50,000, $100,000, $500,000, right? These, whether you're a corporate communications person or at an agency,
sure.
You're asking for a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot imagine the fear out there. I mean, I'm surprised by it, but it's good for business, I feel. You know, but it's the opportunity to help people through that. But I hear so many of my clients say, I could never ask that of their client. I could never ask that of an employee. I could never ask that of my partner in business or in life. And we do a lot of work around, will the earth open up and swallow you? No.
Right, if you ask.
Will you be arrested? No. Will your client really fire you because they did things that caused you to go over budget and you're asking for some of that back? You know, what's the worst that can happen? They'll say no.
Right.
This time. And then you've started to build that muscle that allows you to ask for what you want. So fear is a big one. Do we have time for a few other examples of what we work with, or do we want to?
So you know what? I'm actually going to ask you to hold that thought, because we're just going to take a really quick break, just to give some love to our sponsor. And you know what, Ken? When we get back, you're going to share more on helping those executives, whether it's fear or something else.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with 2 M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Ken Jacobs and I were discussing the difference between a consultant and a coach, and Ken was just telling us about some of the challenges that executives face. So Ken, let's jump back into that, because we talked about the challenges, but frame them out as opportunities, which is a much better way of looking at it. And you were just talking about managing that fear and asking and what would happen if, but I have a feeling you had something to add or some other examples.
Yeah, there are many more examples. I think, you know, one thing we work with them on is giving feedback to their teams and individuals that's truly constructive. I think so many go right into the critique part and they don't stay enough and play enough with the word constructive, because when you can learn how to give critique that is truly constructive, you know, you're not just helping them with better word product or doing it right the next time. You have an opportunity to build trust in someone who works for you or a peer. You have an opportunity to build that relationship. So every time, you know, you have a session where you're giving constructive feedback, you know, don't make it constructive critique. Make it constructive feedback and emphasize the constructed parts. We do a lot of work around that, a lot of work around motivating, inspiring their teams to feel as passionate about the work and the company and the clients as perhaps the leader does. You know, creating and embracing a truly effective communications and leadership style. How to manage the situations and people that cause you stress. You know, we always talk about stress. Stress is very different for people, and stress really can wear away at us. And you, while you're in stress mode, you're not building, you're not constructing, you're not effective. So we help a lot of clients become more aware of what stresses them and how they can deal with them. You know, dealing with non-performing team members, some of it's very business goal oriented. We do a lot of work coaching executives in business development and managing, you know, so leading, which is leading down, managing across with your peers, leading your clients, and then managing up. So that's some of them.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like there are a lot of, I'm not going to say challenges, I'll say opportunities. Absolutely. Yeah. Opportunities to learn and to, like you said, with the trusted relationships, and you're actually getting closer to people as you're helping them, or as they're helping their teammates.
Yeah, and trust is such an important part of all this. You know, there are some essentials of leadership, and if it's not number one, it's number two. There's got to be trust. People follow those. You know, people don't follow leaders because they have the big fancy title, the big fancy office, the big
salary.
They follow people they trust. They follow people who inspire them. They follow confidence and bravery. So that gets back to the opportunity of, you know, of in fact, with some that I work with, we don't even say let's work on your fear, because when you articulate something, you can attract it, even if you put the word no in front of it. So, I don't want to be fearful. Well, you just stated the word fear. That's what you put in the brain. So yeah. I actually, with those clients, I talk about, well, how do we become more confident? How mm-hmm. do we embrace courage and bravery? So this goes back to the neuroscience a bit, and I'm not a neuroscientist. I just play one on TV, but
yeah.
It is about the idea that we attract what we think about. So a lot of the work we do is with helping clients see their current thought patterns and how they can change them to attract more of what they want.
Definitely. You know, I was going to ask you the leadership question, but I think you actually just shared some of the characteristics, the trust in the leader. Leader has to inspire, has to be confident, show bravery, you know, the whole courage. Anything else on the leadership topic that is a must for a leader in today's organization?
I use around nine. I don't know that I'll get them all. You've said a lot of them. The notion of having a vision of what the organization can be and everyone's role in getting there. If you expect people to follow you and to play, the cliched rowing in the same rowboat in the same direction.
Yeah.
They've got to understand the vision for the business and their role in it. They've got to understand your values, because people thrive in and support an organization where there's alignment between the organizational values and their own. And it doesn't have to be every value, but there's got to be enough that they feel that connection. That's why I always encourage leaders, talk about the vision, talk about the values at every opportunity, because those who share the values that you've espoused and those who see their part in the vision will become so much more motivated, so much more loyal, so much more, you know, there, right? And those who don't support the vision, don't see their role in it, and don't share the values, they'll start to think, huh, I wonder if this is the right place for me. And that's good for everyone. That's good for everyone. So share your values, share your vision. Trust is so important. Inspiration is important. Courage. But, you know, before we move on, I think, you know, what's the definition of leadership? And I keep it simple. To me, it's the ability to achieve the desired outcomes of my business, of my organization, whether it's a PR communications agency or a corporate communications department or a corporate marketing department. But it's achieving the outcomes that I want for my organization, for me, for my career, for my peers, for my followers, for myself, and my clients, you know, and not necessarily in that order. It's all about, what do I need to do to get the outcomes I want for all of us? And I'd like to add one thing, which I'm a huge believer in this notion of, you know, leader is servant, servant leadership, mm-hmm. and this notion that your success is not about your success. Your success is about empowering your team to achieve their greatest success. You know, I always say, you're never going to see in the PR cemetery, you're never going to see Joe Smith, he doubled the budget. Like, no, you know,
right.
It doesn't.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good thing, and you'll be rewarded for it. But you know, your leadership legacy is that you have people who think back to the leadership lessons you taught them over mm-hmm. time. That's the leadership lessons. And that's the leadership legacy, in my view. And boy, when you get there, we never really get there, right? But when we accept that, and that's where we want to play, you mm-hmm. know, that's so fulfilling. Oh, my goodness.
Sure is. And I think that leader who shines the spotlight on the team, a true leader doesn't have to get the credit for everything. Like you said, on the tombstone, you're not going to see that. But it is about the team.
Can I salute a friend of mine?
Oh, sure.
There's a great PR guy, Tom Coyne, Coyne PR in New York and Parsippany, New Jersey, whatever. He's got a couple of quotes. Two that I'd share is that just, you know, remember, some of the credit you get is just because your title, is just because you're the leader, you know.
It's, right.
You're getting the credit because the client goes, you know, to the big person. So number one. And number two, and I don't know a thing about sports. I always mess up sports analogies, so let's hope I get it right. When you get praise or credit, respond with a tennis racket, not a catcher's mitt.
Yeah.
Does that seem right? You get it and you send it right out.
You send it right back.
So I love that sports quote because I can remember it, you know. So.
Oh, no, that's a really good quote. You're right, yeah. Because when you get it in the catcher's mitt, you're just keeping it for yourself.
What joy is there in that?
Exactly. You know, so thank you, Tom Coyne.
And I always say, you know, when you're thinking about your team, there is no limit to how often you can say thank you, how often you should say thank you, or the impact and the value it will have to your followers. It's the gift that keeps on giving. And I would say just thank them and thank them and thank until they say, yeah, I get it. You appreciate it. Okay. But if you get that, okay, then you can stop. Till you get that, and you never will.
Right, you won't. Because people need thank yous. They like it.
Yeah, and make it specific. Mm-hmm. And boy, put it in writing, like in a letter, in a memo, in an envelope, in a piece of paper. You know, because we all get email, we all get text, da da da. When you write a little note on beautiful, beautiful stock, you know, your best handwriting that you possibly can muster, the tactile feeling, the sensuousness of opening and mm-hmm. seeing it in your handwriting, and be not just thank you for your effort, thank you for, and be specific. And here I'll quote Maya Angelou. Oh, it's something I mentioned to you.
Yeah.
Last week. They won't always remember what they said, but they'll never forget how you made them feel.
Right. It's a feeling. It goes a long way.
That's true.
I love that little handwritten note.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Feels good to write them. Feels better to get them.
Definitely.
So or maybe not. No, wait, I want to reconsider that. No, so we've been vulnerable. I sent Deirdre a thank you note for something last week, and I think it made her feel, I felt great doing it.
That's great. Well, it made me feel good because I was sick.
Yeah.
I was under the weather. So it was really nice to get that beautiful little card. Much appreciated.
My pleasure. Truly, my pleasure.
Well, thank you. So we touched all about the leader and the characteristics of the leader, but this kind of popped into my mind. What about the characteristics of the coach? So, you know, you being in PR for many years mm-hmm. in the agency world, we tend to be extroverts in PR. Is that a characteristic of the coach? And what are other characteristics to be a successful coach?
I'm not an extrovert. I'm an introvert. Okay, no one's believing that.
No, I don't believe that.
But, all right, okay, not for a minute. But I truly believe anyone can be a coach. And what it's about is that desire to help empower others to achieve their goals. You know, if that's a strong driver for you, you may be a great coach, willing to do extensive training. And you know, the training doesn't end with the certification. You're constantly, you should be. I think in any field, professional development, you know, whether you get credits or not is not important. But actually, when you're in a certified profession, you must keep getting those you know, education credits,
continued,
which I think is only appropriate. But that constant learning, and you want to learn, you go through tremendous coaching of yourself. You do tons of peer coaching. You know, you've got to be able and willing to kind of go there and go deep when you're being coached to coach others. I think other things that can lead to success for a coach: strong intuition. You've got a sense, you've got that coach's intuition of here's what my client needs, and believe that and go with it. I think empathy is critical. I think I don't know the positive words for that, but the absence of judginess. Now, we should all have good judgment.
Right.
But the absence of judginess.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we want as we go through our various leadership levels or energy levels to get to the higher numbers where we're really, really bringing it, like we're just in that zone, it's, you know, it's the absence of judgment. And you never judge a client. Never, ever. You try to get to the heart of what's happening, but we never judge our clients. And I think the other part of it is certainly intellectual curiosity, and acceptance that things are not always what they seem. We talked about that a bit. But I think that one of the biggest things, I mean, unless you are a coach in an HR department at a corporation, you have to accept you are a solopreneur, right?
Right.
And you're going to be doing biz dev and marketing, which to me are two different things, all the time. It is part of your life, and you got to get comfortable. Well, no, I'm sorry. It's not that you have to be comfortable with it. You will have a more successful, fulfilling career
if you are comfortable.
That said, one of the things that I think helps me in biz dev, and I think helps other coaches, and it may help in other kinds of business where you're doing business development, finding clients. If you are strongly motivated by this calling to make the world a better place, help people achieve their goals, help people be satisfied and fulfilled. You know, we call it raising the consciousness of the world at IPEC, raising the consciousness of the world one client at a time. When you know you're doing that, and that's your desire. So I don't think, ooh, I need to bring in three more clients by the end of the quarter. I mean, I may want to, but I wonder who else is out there that I can really help achieve their goals. Where are they? How do I find them? How do I make it likely they'll find me? So when you connect the biz dev to your passion and your joy, it doesn't feel like selling. And it doesn't feel like business development. It's
just feels right.
Just feels right.
That's so good.
Who can I help next month? Oh, and they'll pay me too?
Oh my goodness, they get paid.
No problem there.
That's not a bad deal at all. There's something that you said before that's kind of sticking in my mind. You're talking about the ability to critique or to give the feedback. So how do you, I'm sure this is a part of your role as a coach, how do you help your clients get through a tough discussion with somebody? Yeah. How do you teach them to approach situations the right way, whether it's with a supervisor, a colleague, or even in their personal lives, if that's the case?
So is this that they're giving the critique, or is it just in general a tough discussion?
Yeah, they need to have a tough discussion with someone. Okay. So how do you coach them on that?
Sure. So the first thing I encourage them to remember is that this is your perception of what has happened or is happening, and their perception may be completely different. So what you're sure has happened, ooh, they treated me with disrespect, they don't value my input, you know, that may not be what happened. That may not be what the other person intended. So I encourage that sort of openness that this is what I'm seeing, and it may not necessarily be what happened. So, you know, so don't discuss the facts of you disrespected me. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. You know, we're nowhere. And you've, I'm sure we've all heard this language of, you know, when we were at the team meeting and this happened, it made me feel blah, 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 because that's real. That's how you felt. And, you know, the person then doesn't have to defend the behavior. You know, it happened. No, it didn't. Yes, it did. No, it didn't. It's like, I didn't realize it made you feel that way. You know, let's explore. But I did have an issue maybe with some work you did. Help me understand how I can share that with you where you're not disrespected. Another thing is, I think a lot of us walk into these meetings seeking to be understood. And just like when they say, when you don't feel loved, love more. Well, if you don't feel understood, don't walk into the meeting thinking and acting and saying, I want to be understood. Flip that and say, you know what? I'm going to understand. I'm going to understand what was going on for that other person. And that's because energy is reciprocal. And when you walk into the room, not to have a fight, not to put a line in the sand, not to, you know, oh, you'll never do that to me again. But if you go into it seeking to understand the other person, guess what energy you're going to get back?
Positive energy.
Well, positive, they're going to want to understand you.
Right.
It's just reciprocal. It's going to happen. So, A, bring that kind of energy. Number two, decide that you're going to be on the team figuring this out together, whatever issue that it appears now. And I think, you know, speaking of reciprocity, being very mindful of your energy, your tone. Sure, your words, but your body language. And, you know, we've heard all the theories that communications is, you know, 75% mm-hmm. nonverbal or 85%. You know, it's a lot nonverbal. Let's agree there.
Yes, definitely.
So we may be very careful in our words, but if we're feeling, if we're not respecting the other person, if we're not seeking to understand them, we can use the words of understanding and respect. But if our body language and energy and tone and eyes, if that's not signaling understanding, if it's not signaling respect, that's going to trump the words. So be very mindful of words that, you know, on one hand, I would say, don't create defensiveness, but mm-hmm. that's negative. That's using the word we don't want. So be mindful of words and body language and tone that create openness, And the last thought there, and I want to honor a coach, Judy Rosemarin, who taught this to me, honor their kingdom. Be always thinking about what's in this conversation, what's important for them. Ego, respect, being listened to, whatever it is, an honor, and show that you're honoring it, and show that you're listening. Paraphrase what they're saying. So what I think, I think what I heard you say is, you know, honor their kingdom. And then finally, decide that no matter what, you're going to be the grown-up in the room. Even if the other person is your boss or your boss's boss or a peer, you're going to be the grown-up. You're going to watch the conversation to make sure it's not going off the rails, off kilter. And if they react with anger or this and that, or if they say, oh, I'm so sorry. I can see from your response, that's not what I meant. Can I say that differently? Like, you've got to work to be in charge that if it goes off the rails, sometimes the other person can't bring it back.
Yeah.
So you decide, I'm going to bring it. I'm going to get it back to this very constructive place.
Excellent. Really, really good advice, Ken.
Good.
So one last easy question. Where can my listeners find out more about you and your work?
As many of you who know me know, I've had Jacobs Communications Consulting, as Deirdre said, from 2007. I had Jacobs Executive Coaching since 2014. I had a lot of smart people saying, why two companies? Why two brands? Why two websites? So I just want to say to all of them, and some weren't saying it, but some were thinking it, you know, like Deirdre and our mutual friends. So I can't put a date with it, but we are forming one company. It is Jacobs Consulting and Executive Coaching. There will be one website.
Fantastic.
But I don't want to put a date on that. So for right now, to learn more about me, it's www.jacobsexecutivecoaching.com, just like it sounds. And to reach me via email, it's ken@jacobscomm.com.
Terrific. And they can also find you on Twitter, too. What's your Twitter handle?
I'm on Twitter. I'm Ken's Views.
Yes. And I'm on Twitter with you.
Yes. Ken. I'm tweeting.
Yes, and always tweeting. Ken, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your journey, and really giving a lot of great advice. And, you know, we learned a lot from you. So thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I truly appreciate it, and I value our friendship very much.
Oh, well, thank you. I feel the same way. And I also want to thank everyone for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.